formative written comments. Over the last several weeks, I have had discussions again with pretty much everyone, and it has emerged that there are quite a few folks that would are interested in seeing those comments, would like to make them public. And I have reached out to those folks who make comments, talk to them, and those comments will be made available to people, I hope today, so that others in the group can begin to see where other group members stand, what their thoughts are, what the thought process is. And I think the way I'll handle that is I will, if I can, I'll just attach it to an email as Dick Diggs. I think it's probably easier to do it that way. I don't think it would be a memory issue, so it can be all consolidated in one place. I'm also going to present some of the results from, I'm calling it a poll, but really it's a number table where you can see where people voted for each alternative. And I think it's also worth people hearing and knowing that by poll and by numbers, I mean the reason why that was put together is just so that people in the group could get a feel for where people were putting their priorities. It doesn't mean in any way, shape, or form that that's the end result. So I'll walk through that a little bit, and we'll have a discussion about that. As Jeff said, we'll talk a little bit more about next steps and how we get how we then are going to select the restoration alternatives. I'll pause for a second. Anybody have any questions? So I'll continue on then. So as I indicated, the memo came out in July. It took a while to consolidate all the comments and to reach out and talk to folks, pull them together. But I teased out five or so common themes. By common themes, what I mean is that these thoughts and people's comments, as you'll see when you get the comments, is that these are things that were reflected across multiple responses. And I think overwhelmingly, people were of the opinion that the do-nothing approach just isn't going to work. That based on our findings, especially in the geomorphic report about pit filling rates, about the existing habitat that exists out at the pits right now currently, that the proposed recovery times that we were talking about going forward in the future, this is not going to work. So that was alternative one. So I think that's, we can kind of do away with doing nothing. I think there was general agreement that the pits are the highest priority, and I think that that makes sense too. It's certainly a bottleneck there, and I think if you were to cast back to the East Fork Habitat Restoration Plan developed in 2009, the LCFRB, they also called out the pits site as the number one priority project in the Lower River. So people were generally in agreement that we should be focusing our attention on the pits area. And I think that's what we have done and what we're going to continue to do going into the future. We have to figure out how to solve the issues down there. Another common theme is that restoration efforts really should rely on the natural processes. And with some acknowledgement that the river's going to move around in responses to flood events, sediment deposition, and to biological processes. And by that I mean wood accumulating wood, and the effect that that is having on not only the channel form, but the connection to side channels, the improvement and increase in habitat, the cooler water that we're seeing go subsurface hyporheic at those locations. And that these are the approaches that we should focus on. a little bit surprising to me was that folks were generally in agreement that costs should not really be driving our efforts to look at this and to plan and to potentially restore. And now I'm talking particularly about the Pitts area. There was pretty good agreement that we should be going big and not scaling back just because it potentially could be a big number. And then finally, I think it makes sense that, of course, increased spawning and rear habitat were a huge focus for folks. Most people were in agreement that increasing the channel migration zone as well as floodplain connectivity were huge issues and concerns, and people wanted to see that maximized to the greatest extent possible. And I think finally, again, kind of universally across the board, that we have to figure out if we can to how to increase and protect some of the existing cold water, I call them refuges, but in cases they could, that to me, that means maybe a little bit bigger area like the Mill Manly connection, but that also means areas that we're finding cooler water in pits 8 and 9, some of the hyperreic flow that we're seeing around some of the wood accumulation, some of the hyperreic flow that's coming out of Daybreak's pits. How can we capitalize on that and integrate that into the project? I'll pause again for a second. Any questions there or comments?
Do you want to address the chat questions now, Paul, or as we go?
Please, I mean, because I'm on like full screen. My now chat box thing is closed. Like, I can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the way to do it is for you to read it off, the comment.
Sure. Yeah, there was one question in the chat. Who decided designs will be developed at 3 sites? What was the rationale for that? Why not tackle one issue one place at a time? Why spread our efforts? I favor a step-by-step one issue at a time approach to be successful. I do not recall ever voting or supporting 3 different locations.
So when we first put together the grant application back in 2017, as part of the process, what we have to do is identify particular areas or regions that we're working in, and we call that the project area. And then we also have to drill down and identify particular reaches or channel lengths that we're going to be working in, and in those channel lengths and reaches, benefits to fish, costs, certainty of success. So built into the application, we have to identify particular regions of the river that we're working in. And for our case, actually, we defined the project areas between Powerline Bend and Daybreak Bridge. But within that, when we pitch this, we have to say we're doing a project at X location. And the Ridgefield Pits was already identified as the number one ranked project, so we chose that. What emerged also was that upstream side channels were also identified in the East Fork Basin plan, so we pulled those in. And then kind of late in the game, how the Mill Manly connection emerged.
Hey, Paul, this is Ian. I'm just wondering, do you have more common themes, or I'm just wondering where some of the watershed issues fit into common themes of low water, withdrawal, sediment issues, those kinds of things.
I would say that was, thanks Ian, I'd say that trying to figure out how to look at or evaluate surface water was an issue. I have to go back and look at it. I'm not sure it was one of the more common ones, but it was definitely people are reflecting back that, hey, the East Fork gets really low in the summertime. In some areas it's wide and shallow. You know, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to address it? And by that, I mean, I think it gets a bit nuanced too, right? There's areas of the river that are wide and shallow. There's areas of the river that are more, you know, are not the pits. And so it's a bit nuanced. I that was it for the common themes, Ian. I did have some slides on, I got moved. Sorry, these are the restoration alternatives, and it kind of got bumped up here. There was some, I have another slide on other ideas and concerns. And I think, not to move the conversation away, we can return to common themes. But as you can see in the concerns we've reflected, as you're talking about, there were some comments reflected back about how with the depth ratios were high, warming river temperatures, which have to do with surface water, right? Which I think gets to your a little bit to your question, Ian. So I think as long as we're on the concerns bullet there, we can talk a little bit more about some of the, again, going through the comments, some of people's concerns related to erosion, how are we going to deal with erosion, especially related to some of the high bluffs and the continued problem that's presented over the decades in terms of sediment delivery to the river. I think moving down, some folks felt that creating a single thread channel through there has had problems historically, and that's not the way to go. Warming river temperatures. Some folks felt that relying on engineering strategies for bringing cold water was not really the way to go. There were some other comments that suggested that was the way to go. So there was a difference of opinion there. And then how to plant and ensure future riparian conditions. There was some targets that were thrown out in terms of percent cover that seemed low or high that we needed to look at. And then in terms of when to plant. Some folks felt better to plant early on, some folks better to wait, a little bit of that split. kind of finishing up this slide, other ideas, a couple of folks, either in conversation or through written comments, talked about potentially hybrids of alternatives 2 and 3. How could we look at opening up historic channels? Some folks thought that that was a good solution to try to remove some of the pressure off the river and get to this idea of floodplain connection. Incorporating or encapsulating daybreak pits area for some were also important. And I think if any one of these bullets I'm reading off, we have talked as a group about these, and we could obviously spend a lot of time almost on every bullet talking about it. So my purpose here is to summarize a little bit of the comments so people can see what other folks were thinking. And then finally, greater activation of the side channel. So the side channel we've currently targeted upstream, people wanted to see year-round connection with that. I'm gonna cast back here a little bit, but I'll pause too. I have the restoration alternatives up here, which I, you know, folks wanted to see them just to remind them what they were. I got a little bit out of myself there, but just to remind, I know it's easy to kind of forget or not remember exactly, but alternative one was the do nothing approach. Alternative two, which we're looking at right now, it has 2 and 2A. So you can see 2 would be putting it back in the pre-avulsion pathway. So that would be before 95. That's the blue line you see here. The dashed blue line you see is alternative 2A, which would be basically trying to cut the channel through. Here's pit 8 or 9, I always forget, which is the cold water pocket. Try to cut it through this way. The thinking being is that the river is trying to go this way at present. So why not capitalize on that? Alternative three was more of a interbranching plan form, where we're trying to grade out into the floodplain, get that channel out onto its historic floodplain, and really expand out the channel migration zone. 3A was actually, I'm trying to remember what our 3A option was, a little bit less floodplain grading and trying to retain these cold water pockets. You see where my cursor is, that's pit 8 or 9 where there's cold water. So that would mean not grading that area out. And I can, we can go back and revisit this if folks have questions or want to look at these alternatives again. Back to that question about why are we working these areas? This is the reflecting the upstream side channel work. So alternative four, these are the two upstream side channels. This one was called out in the East Fork Basin Plan, the 2009 plan. And we basically added on, or really just extended this channel as part of this identified side channel. I know you guys have seen these before, but I feel like it's worth just showing you again, or talking about it again for the folks on the phone. Alt five was to look at a high flow channel at the, here's the Mill Manly confluence. This is a high flow channel to try to produce some scour here and try to transport some of the material that's building up that confluence and capitalize on that thermal refuge that we know exists there. And then alt six is looking at trying to create some additional pathways for the river to go and remove some of the old levee that was up at the old county yard there. So I know I rushed those alternatives pretty quick, but I know folks have been staring at them for a while too. So I just wanted to remind people of what those alternatives were. And I'll pause. Questions?
I just had a comment that I'd like to make, that having gone back and looked at the 1930s photos and checked elevations and so forth, and some of you may be well aware of this, but the floodplain that now exists in the Ridgefield pits is worlds different from when the floodplain in that area had all these Eskimos channels in it. It's a whole different environment, and it is not an Eskimos channel environment. So I think we really need to be careful and cautious about that. And the bed load in the 1930s was quite different than what we're getting down now. Now we're getting a lot of coarse material. So I'm very concerned that going into multiple channels is going to be very unstable and isn't going to hold, whereas possibly a two-channel system with the right curvature or could possibly work in there, and maybe you could feed the other ponds or areas into that, but have only a couple of main channels going through there and try and pull in that hyperuric upwelling area next to Daybreak that we lost before. So it would be more of a modification, as you mentioned earlier, of alternative two and three, but I think that would be much more successful and productive. Like you say, these are starting points, but Anastomose channels in the current setting, I've talked to some other people that are very knowledgeable about this, and they doubt very much if that would be stable. You know, again, we're starting, this is a working point, but you're not in the same world now that basically are situations that actually where Anastomose channels work. That's it.
Thanks, Dick. Other comments?
Paul, so on this question, your next step in this process would be to model and do a deeper dive in this to see if that's even a feasible option. Is that a correct assumption?
Yep. So our idea is to, and I pulled up the quote modeling slide here, is to run these alternatives and evaluate them, you know, as Ian is saying, looking at things like velocity, shear stress, temperatures, but also sediment competency. That's a big component of what we're going to be doing, as well as channel stability. And to your point, Dick, you know, the idea is to look at some quantifiable data, not as the only, not as the be all end all, but as a, you know, as an important step in trying to flush out, are these alternatives feasible? And if they're not, and it doesn't come out, doesn't bear out, we'll have the ability to revise them, to adjust them, to do some sort of hybrid, to iterate the by iterate, I mean, just run different scenarios, two channels, three channels, to look at, you know, the things that we're really interested in terms of, you know, habitat depth, but also these things about sediment competency that are really going to drive future development of that area. Is it going to work? So right.
Yeah, sorry to come in late, everybody. But my perspective on these alternatives is that the trajectory of the pits as they are going to take decades or more to fill in and start to advance through the stages of geomorphology and to get to a more stable state. As Dick's pointed out many times, the amount of sediment that's coming through and whatnot, it's not in a stable state right now. And so I like alternatives three and components of alternatives two, because it does that reset that speeds up that recovery towards a more more stable state. And so I like the feedback that Dick's provided on the sediment and whatnot. So yeah, I think that, but without that reset, we're just gonna see those pits really slowly advance, and it's not gonna be beneficial at all, not for temperature and not for warm water species, you know, all the things that we've talked about, all the things that folks know the East Fork know are issues, are just going to continue to be issues without that larger reset.
I'll just add in that, thanks for all those comments, really good discussion points. And we've been thinking some and talking some about a sort of a 2-3 hybrid. One of the issues with two that I think a lot of folks notice is if we try to keep the channel into that, the pre-avulsion alignment is, for one, that channel is higher in elevation because of the avulsion and the reduction in grade. Mm-hmm. So there'd be some work to get it in there to begin with, some excavation work to get it in there. And then you'd to keep it there, if you wanted to keep it there and not fill the rest of the pits, then you'd almost have to create these berms to sort of prevent it from re-avulsing back into the pits, which then you're constricting your channel migration zone and potentially some of your floodplain inundation area. But the hybrid may be on the scale of three, in the sense that it is a full regrade of the area, but instead of having the sort of 2-5 channel sort of anabranch pattern, it's a 1-3 channel or 2-4 channel or something like that. But that the floodplain inundation rates are similar. The objective of this multi-thread is really to maximize the channel margin habitat, which we know is really important. It's also to have narrower channels that over time can be shaded better from riparian vegetation. But there are questions with how it will, how sustainable it will be. And it's very likely this thing, you know, will create a channel pattern, and it's going to be a depositional area continuing to collect sediment, build grade, because we're lacking, you know, 700,000 cubic yards of sediment. And that it's going to continue to adjust in there. But if it means it's a few less channels, less multi-threaded, but still accomplishes some of those other objectives, that also seems like a very viable solution if we think that that's maybe a more stable planform geometry to put it in during construction.
Yeah, thanks, Gordon.
I think that's really important there, Gardner, to point out the elevation difference between the right bank and left bank, especially since that right bank hyperaic flow is so important. Again, as Dick has pointed out over and over, if that's where their cooled water is, then that's definitely a priority for me. So activating that right bank side, I think, is a priority from that perspective. But to isolate the whole river to that side and abandon the left side of the floodplain, I think would be a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and you could still have a channel over on the right side, but have the rest of the pits connected to it. You know, still regrade the rest. So that is an option.
This is Jim, and I would like to talk about the Mill Creek work. I'd like to take that off the table because I believe we're only treating a symptom, not the cause. The hole at the confluence of Mill Creek is filled in with gravel due to WASDOT construction on State Road 502 or 219th Street. Since that construction work occurred, a whole bunch of gravel keeps moving down Mill Creek and fills up the hole at the intersection with the East Fork. So until we address the gravel and prevent that from coming down, we're not going to solve the problem. You can scoop gravel out now and move it, and 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now, the gravel will be back in the hole. Until we address the gravel situation, I think it's premature to spend any time or money at the confluence of the East Fork and Mill Creek.
Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, Jim, I've spent a lot of time there in the lower end of Mill Creek, and I just continue to see it in size in there. You know, I haven't spent as much time in there in the last 2-3 years, but your description's spot on. Unfortunately, I don't think, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think this project has the scope to look at all the hydrology changes associated with the 502 expansion.
Well, you know, we're not scoped to do that, but that doesn't mean that. And Devin and I have had some conversations about this, and others probably have too. That doesn't mean that we couldn't try to make inroads up there in other, and by we, I mean not necessarily us, but others can try to make inroads up there to try to address that. What we're doing right now is trying to look at this to see, frankly, as I said, to see if these are even feasible. And what Jim is pointing out is, you know, the upstream source of material, the question is, does the high flow channel that we're proposing have enough velocity and to be able to transport that material out? I think the answer is not known yet. We're on the hook to look at that and to address that. And I think it'd be nice if we had some more information to see, is that possible? It might not be possible. And yet that upstream source needs to be addressed, as Jim was saying. I guess another way of thinking about this is we have to, when we construct the hydraulic model, our domain is, I'm not meaning to take this sideways, the domain is from Daybreak Bridge down to the Powerline Bend. That's what we're looking at modeling. It's ambitious, but that's what we're on the hook to do. And so as part of that, this Mill Manly sits in the middle of that effort. So if we can, again, try to run the model and look at, again, just one way of looking at it, not the only way of looking at it, but one way of looking at it is to see, do we have the hydraulics to accomplish that? And furthermore, then, are there any downstream risks? Because we know that downstream bluff is right there too. We have to consider that. So, it's complicated. But our idea is to take a look at it. See if we can come up with, under this restored condition, will that work?
The things you're going to run into as you look at the sinuosity ratio through there and you're dealing with the inside of a bend, you're not going to have much for velocities to push anything out of a pool. The velocities are going to be on the north side. So, yeah, I understand this is a starting point, but as Jim pointed out, you've got all that material coming down, and they've also appears to have dumped more water to the north. I've metered that a number of times because I had worked with another project up at Dollar's Corners that actually studied the north and south split that the Corps of Engineers did a long time ago. Well, evidently it's been modified again as part of the construction. In fact, we know that, so they're putting more water in there. That's tearing up the channel as well as the other stuff Jim mentioned. So, we all like to see Mill Creek function a lot better. And it also helped Manly Road Creek because we put a lot of time and work in Manly for the steelhead and the coho. But it is a little bit of a challenge right in there. And there's some other things that need to be address first, as Jim pointed out, and the fact that it's an inside bend, you're dealing with a much more challenging problem. And just blowing the water out of there I don't think that's going to be very feasible without adjusting the sinuosity ratios and other things. I'm not saying it can't be done, but that might be better to be put on the shelf and say, let's do it, but we're going to have to look at a lot deeper. So that's my thoughts at this right now, because we've got a lot of data on that area for the last 10 years or so.
Paul, if I could weigh in on this one a little bit. A lot of these thoughts are what led us to the alternative 6. And if you want to switch over to that one, because we had a lot of the same thoughts as, to be able to configure a high flow channel to effectively scour out that material that maybe is likely related to this other bigger upstream watershed issue. Seems like a tall order. And then when we were doing our historical air photo analysis, and Dick, I'm sure you've seen this as well, that meander bend is kind of been doing a down valley scroll. And if that continues, which there's no reason to think it wouldn't continue for the foreseeable future, what that would do is create a bigger alcove that Mill and Manly, a longer alcove that Mill and Manly empty into. And what would happen is it would basically lengthen that area of cold water refuge. You'd have a wall-based channel up along that steep valley wall instead of the, eventually, instead of the river hitting that thing dead on, there'd be a wall-based channel there that would be fed by these cold water tributaries, which may provide a pretty nice cold water source. And so this was kind of looking at letting that process happen, maybe even encouraging that process to happen by putting some log jams on the inside of the bend to sort of encourage that down valley scrolling. We also had the levee removal in here to just further allow that process to happen, and then talked about addressing the upstream watershed issue on Mill Creek to deal with the sediment source at the same time. So those thoughts were kind of the genesis of this, and we added some to it, but that is what led to this alternative.
Just to build on that, what Gardner said, an alternative four, you've got what you're calling side channels. Those are really flood overflow channels, not side channels. Side channels don't have an entry at the top, but that's beside the point. It might be worth looking into putting the river into the flood overflow channel and building a whole new channel through there, getting it away from the cliff, and then the both Mill Creek and Manly Road could then flow over to the north and into that enlarged side channel. You know, that's a little larger step, but you could deal with the meander ratio a lot easier probably. It's something I think that needs to be looked at. I understand the scrolling. What's a big issue is that cliff, and if we could just somehow reasonably get away from that. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that a channel has been changed, although we've got steelhead that lie in that bend right there opposite and upstream of the outlet of Mill Creek and Manny Road Creek. But there's some options to look into. That's it.
Yeah, so with this alternative six, Gardner, what's the likelihood of the foul wag of the river occupying the right bank and abandoning the left side of the channel?
Great question. Your guess is as good as mine. This doesn't strike me. I think there's a better chance it would slowly migrate over there in time. I don't see that side channel right now as a real viable avulsion pathway. Although it, as that continues to scroll and you get a tighter meander bend on that downstream bend, you know, then that might be a preferential pathway for it to avulse through the, what would be then the lower half of that side channel. And then it would be a full channel switch over there. I'm a fan of letting those processes happen and setting this up so you can encourage the river to scroll over there. And then it may just slowly get there over time through scrolling, or it may evolve into that side channel over there. You may have a split flow channel for a period with that cold water entering into one of the splits. You may have an abandoned channel with cold water entering into the abandoned channel. And in my mind, all those are good scenarios and would expand your cold water refuge, and they would take the pressure off of the high steep bank.
Yeah, I like this alternative six better than trying to force something with alternative five. That alternative five is really similar to the conceptual design that I wrote up couple of years ago. And you know, the more that I've learned about this site from all of you, the more I see that alternative five is kind of a lofty idea more than a feasible one.
just to bring it back again, I think that the data may bear out as we run these models may really end up supporting that viewpoint. And so, again, I'm not the be-all end-all, but another way of trying to, you know, support that idea, Bryce.
Something that I should add, because some of you may not be aware of it, but where the scroll patterns start on the diagram, there used to be a right angle dike way out into the river. So the river actually used to go to the right. When the county got done doing some mining, they stuck that dike in there. And that just made it worse to drive the river over toward Mill Creek outlet into the cliffs.
Yep.
We worked with the county and we're about to take it out, and the county basically changed their mind and they took it out then. But it had had quite an impact while it was in. And so at one time the river did go farther to the north. So in case some of you haven't ever had a chance to look at the aerial photos over time, that's, it would have shown up there, but don't, and not everybody's got a set of aerial photos going back to the 30s and so forth. But anyway, that's what happened. That dike had a tremendous impact and it's gone, but the effects are still there. You've got these overflow channels that are functioning, but there was a much different channel in there one time.
That's it. Which is a good point, Dick. And so the geomorphic presentation we did, I don't remember how long ago, meeting four or five, Gardner put together a PowerPoint presentation, and all those aerial photos he included in there. So if people wanted to go back and look at those, going back to the 30s, they're in there in the presentation. If folks need that link or want to look at that, just let me know. I think it's on the FTP site. I'll check that, but they exist, and there's a consolidated place that people can go if they want to look at those. Other comments coming in, Keith?
Nothing so far, no.
I would just add that, you know, one of the challenges with Alternative 6, as probably apparent to everyone, is the way it's laid out here anyways, involves a change to the county maintenance yard lot. And I don't even think any discussions have happened necessarily in that regard, but I think this group would be a good group to possibly initiate those discussions with the county to see if that's even a option worth pursuing.
Right.
And there may be ways to do this. You know, there are ways to do elements of this that don't require changing that. You just have your kind of setback protection in a little bit different spot, the upstream in there.
Other comments? I don't necessarily want to spend a ton of time on this. I know I pushed it, put it out in an email. And so what you're looking at, or for folks on the phone that can't see this, I basically, I asked folks to look at each of the alternatives and give it a high, medium, low, just as kind of a first look to see where people were standing, where their, you know, what their feeling was about these alternatives. Again, not as a this final decision point at all. And I'm flashing this graphic up here just so that people can see the results. There are 14 people who ended up participating. And I think, as you can see, it reflected, it reflects a, at least at the first look here, that those folks were interested in alternatives 3 and 3A. Alternatives four and five and six are fell more on the high medium. Not a lot, a whole lot of low scores on that, but people are kind of split, kind of didn't flush out as a high priority per se. So again, this is just a first look where people were at with that. As we work through the modeling process, we said we'll have ways to tweak this. And
well,
you know, go ahead.
You know, I was just thinking, you know, we've had a conversation here on a number of these alternatives, and it seems to me that if I heard correctly, we're sort of talking about sort of a hybrid three, which is sort of a hybrid 2-3 alternate. It might cut the number of channels down to two or three, I believe, Gardner, you were saying. And I think folks felt fairly comfortable with that, and they felt fairly comfortable with alternative six, although I think there are some issues there that need to be resolved in terms of its feasibility with regard to the county maintenance shed. But are we starting to narrow in here on a couple of alternatives that perhaps advance to that next stage, this sort of hybrid 2-3, and taking a look at six? Any input from folks?
Yeah, well, from my perspective, this is Ian. I support those two. Yeah, I think more work is needed. I think the input has had an impact on me, and I guess I would say you. It sounds like you might be narrowing in on two. I don't know what the third one might be, but.
I second that. I'd like to see the model results, especially near the mouth of Mill Creek, see what the velocities are over on that left side, right side, after you add roughness to that left side. And then I'd also like to see model results for that right bank area of hyperbaric uplifting that we have down there at the pits, and see how much flow and what flow elevations activate that, because that's a priority area for CHUM, so making sure that it's wetted up in November, December would be a priority for me to look at.
Oh, there's been a few chat questions about what's going on in upstream Mill Creek. I don't know if it's answered, or if you want to talk about that a little more. Bryce had a little feedback on there. Somebody was asking what the issues are and what can be done up there.
Yeah, that was me, Keith. This is Alex. And thank you, Bryce. Good answer.
Other comments?
So this is Steve Jones. I can't put in questions by chat, so since I lost a web signal, but I'm on the phone.
Sure, we can read it out. Yeah, the question was. Sorry.
Thank you. Yes, read the question.
Sure. The question was, can we more clearly define the upstream sediment supply issues in Mill Creek and what actions can realistically be taken here. And then Bryce had mentioned that essentially the basin size was changed when Highway 502 is expanded. With increased flows, the stream is responding. The fix could be one or more of the settling ponds installed along the highway back to pre-expansion.
Hmm. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks. I just go back to, you know, a comment about the 2-3 options, the choice of two, trying to pursue engineering on that, modeling on that. I would certainly, you know, agree, but the question I have is that, you know, we heard back in 2018 or 2019 at one of our early meetings that, you know, there was a century of mining there that really lowered the elevation of the whole area. And to try and restore the East Fork by perching a new channel on the edge of that withering floodplain sounds risky. And that's why the whole recontouring in scenario three was given so much consideration in the document. I guess I'd like to know, you know, the modeling scenario two would need to really look at the viability of sustaining that channel when you've got a very large floodplain adjacent to it that would be, you would try and isolate the water, the river, from reaching into. I see that. I don't know much about the hydrology or the engineering of trying to do that, but if we're looking for a long-term solution that's not going to require high levels of maintenance, it seems risky to not include that floodplain in the restoration. Those are just my comments.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I think you're right on. That's kind of why, that's sort of why three was, did rank higher for a lot of those reasons.
This is Alex. Can you point out what part of the floodplain he's referring to there, just so I'm clear on that?
I don't feel qualified to answer that in, you know, scientifically, but I think what we're talking about are the areas that are identified as pits 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, if that makes any sense. And I defer to everybody else on this call who knows far more about the hydrology of the site than me.
Paul, if you can go to the alt 2, I think it.
Thanks.
Maybe this answers your question, Alex. I think that was Alex. Putting the channel back into the pre-avulsion alignment and not filling the rest of the pits or regrading that in any way puts, there is a risk of that channel then re-evulsing into these ponds. You could prevent that by providing a berm, you know, essentially a levee, a nice levee. You could at least limit your risk of that happening, but then you're kind of constraining your, you are constraining your channel migration zone, potentially constraining a lot of your floodplain innovation. But the hybrid approach would, you could do this under a hybrid approach where you regrade, where you do regrade the entire thing, kind of like a three, alt three, but you have kind of a main channel, maybe with some, you know, one or two secondary channels, but your main channel is located over on that right side, at least once you construct it that way. It might adjust over time. It would adjust over time. You're talking about this being a very well connected floodplain that's going to move around. Where the channels will move around over time, but you could certainly construct your main channel over there on the right side if that is believed to be the best from a hyperreic input standpoint.
Right. So the point made earlier was he expressed the desire, I think it was Steve, expressed the desire to keep that part of the floodplain in play, basically, right? And not try to isolate it from the pits area, whether that includes filling them or not, but just to not take actions that keep that pre-evulsion channel, if it's reset that way, out of that floodplain. Basically to keep the whole flood, as much floodplain in play as we can, I think was his point, if I heard him right.
I think that's right.
You did hear me right. That is my view, correct.
Thank you.
I mean, dialing the river channel back to the 1996 level is great, but then we get another 100-year flood and we've got our problem all over again.
Let me make a comment about that. Addressed. If you look at alternative 2 and 3 and you see the dotted line, you don't necessarily have to divert the channel back into its original path, but you could move the curvature over to the west toward that dotted line, but go further closer to the wall of the pits and still capture a lot of that hyperuric zone in there and the bubbling up and cooling effects that are in there. And that's something that we want to capitalize as much as we can on it. And then you could still have another channel going through the major part of the pits and still avoid the astemozing challenges and run some of those other ponds into that second channel, but not splitting it up into all these smaller areas where you're going to just exacerbate temperature problems and you've got low flows. Remember, at the critical time, we don't have much water. You know, we've gotten 60 is nothing. It's very common, 60s and 70s, and you start spreading that around, we got fish problem. Because there's a lot of rearing that also occurs down below in 2-3 large pool areas. So please keep that in mind. And again, we're talking about a hybrid, but we don't necessarily have to divert things back into the original channel, but we want to capture where the red line is, that's where a lot of that hyperuric upwelling begins, and that's a tremendous asset for everything. That's it.
Thanks.
So this is Jim. I agree with what Steve Jones said. For me, temperature is key, and there's been a little discussion about temperature. So I would like to maximize as much cold hyperreic flow as possible. I'm more of a biologist than a hydrogeologist, so I'm hoping Dick or Gardner can explain to me how alternative 2 or alternative 3, which one of those can potentially provide the greatest amount of cold hyperreic flows.
My comment is combine the two into a hybrid. There's some real, I think, more productive potentials that have been brought up here or suggested that there are pathways to that. And I think that's terribly important if we're going to get the most out of an investment in there for both fish and for what it accomplishes and for a balanced system.
So just where on the plots of alternative and three are these pools of colder?
Well, if you look at alternative two,
flows and how do they move into the river where we need them?
Where the red line is, right along there is a whole upwelling area, and it's still there. It's, if you start at the right where it says existing Beaver Dam Complex, you go down, the red line starts, you got to go down below the red line just a little bit, but from there on down, That's a tremendous upwelling area. And it's, like I say, it's still there. We check that every year.
I've been asking the same questions of myself when I'm designing projects, like what's the most productive summer rearing habitat? And what I've seen from snorkel surveys on the South Fork and the East Fork is that the fish are not all concentrated into these big deep pools where you might suspect. Logic says, all right, there's more hyperbaric water flowing into these big deep pools, but there's also more predators in there and they don't like that open area. And so what I've seen, the highest concentrations of fish that I've seen during the summer in particular is in 2 to 3 foot deep water with cover. And so when you compare a single thread channel to a multi-thread channel, if you have multiple threads, you've got more of those 2 to 3 deep with cover pools. So you've got overall more water, and in the hyperaic is associated with the frequency of water going underground and then coming back up. And so if you have a few big pools, you're not going to have as much interaction as if you have more smaller pools. That's the way I've been understanding it recently and kind of what I've been aiming at with our restoration priorities on the South Fork of the Tootle. Gardner, does that jive with what you guys have been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I defer to the biologist some on this, but as far as my thoughts on the temperature and a lot of the information that's coming out about these anabranching kind of multi-thread channel networks that are very well connected to their floodplain, which this would be, is you get a raise in the water table, so that helps a lot. You the smaller channels have width to depth ratios that are lower, and so that's good for temperature in itself, but then they also are more able to be shaded than the main stem East Fork Lewis in a single channel, and so there's some benefits there. I think you can also have these channels that, and maybe they're a side channel, maybe it's one of the co-dominant main channels that does go over and capture some of that hyperreic flow. I'm not sure that having a single thread channel up against those hyperreic seeps is the best idea, because the dilution effect might be pretty strong. In fact, it may be better to have a split channel, a secondary channel or tertiary channel that actually picks those up and is able to actually remain cooler. So those are thoughts that I'm thinking of there.
Let me say something. I think some of you guys are misunderstanding me. I'm not saying just one channel. I'm saying a channel up to catch the hyperuric area and a channel through the pits. But keep in mind, anabranking is for silt and sand-based systems. This is not what you're getting here. They don't work when you got cobble and gravel. So you can lose it very quickly with the flood regime that you've got in the East Fork. So yeah, they're great if you got silt and sand and clay. That's not what's going on in the lower East Fork. So that's a big factor. Please keep that in mind.
It could be good.
Let me see if I can kind of sum up at least some of the key points that we've been hearing and perhaps provide a framework. But one is there seems to be a desire to maximize the active floodplain. And also to access or make maximum use of cool water inputs. Seems like there's a consensus here. I'm breaking up here a little bit.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a consensus here that we should have more than one main channel. We should have several channels, perhaps not as many as were originally proposed in option 3 or 3A, but certainly multiple channels moving through here. And that we have, it's available out there, both in terms of its quantity and its water quality. Are we hitting on some points there that we're in agreement on?
Yeah, we missed probably your second point. You were breaking out for a little bit.
Well, my second point was we want to make maximum use of cold water inputs where we can. That's a key one. But again, maximize active floodplain, access to those cool water inputs, multiple channels, and the ability to make sure that as we're looking at multiple channels, that we're sort of maximizing what we think are sustainable low water habitat volumes.
Sounds good to me, Jeff.
Others? We're starting to focus down here on something that we can use to sort of construct, I think, what is basically been characterized as the hybrid.
Yep.
We're not hearing any violent objections.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's a much better direction to head, or an adjustment to make from what foundations already been laid, is to combine a couple channels and feed some of these other pond areas into, say, the channel that would potentially go through the pond, but have two main channels with the right sinuosity so that they would handle that type of bed load that's coming down, and you could feed the cold water from some of those ponds that does come in from some of that wall and other areas, and then at the same time having a channel maybe to the left of that blue pool that shows up in two, or right in that area that picks up the upwelling, but have a two channel system with the right sinuosity and feed the other areas into that. That way you can utilize what little water we got and take advantage of some temperature reduction support. I think that's where Jeff was headed anyway. But not use the old channel that shows up in there in two. Because I understand that would be has all kinds of challenges with it, with the way the existing channel is down cut, but you could shift to the west and have two channels and catch that hyperbaric area to the north along the Daybreak pit. That's it.
Oh, we found cold water over on the west side too, correct? Above where it says alternative two pathway.
That's right. This is a hyperreic zone in here where water subs out and then re-expresses downstream core.
Yeah.
That may be an example of just the elevated water table, since that area has filled in. It could be just a really small example of what the larger area could express.
Mm-hmm.
If those other pits were filled in a little bit.
I agree.
Be interesting to see what the thermal study shows from a cold water perspective.
Yeah.
When that comes out.
Yeah, this is Devin Rostra. I'm sorry, I had to step away. I got a phone call, so I may have missed something, but I know I've had a chance to talk with you, Paul, and I agree that for me, regardless of which alternative moves forward, I think that information from the thermal assessment and confirming where those cold water gains are, and also where the project area, there are losing reaches, that's the type of information that I'll be looking for. And I know that'll come out of some of the modeling work, and really as this moves forward and you get closer to a decision point or a preferred alternative or alternatives, I agree with what Dick has said and others have said that the information from the thermal refuge assessment and the modeling will just get us closer to really making sure that the preferred alternative is enhancing gaining reaches and enhancing those cold water inputs to this area. So I don't know if that's helpful, but I've just been curious to kind of know more and watch how the thermal refuge assessment that's kind of going on simultaneously will just inform this process as well.
So I guess
we're looking at trying to conclude here at 10:30. That gives
I was going to say, I look at it for six minutes out.
I think we have sort of a picture of what might be a working alternative or parameters for it for this particular area, the pits area. We talked a little bit about alternative six for the Manly Creek, but what about that other option four? Do we need to be talking about where we want to go there? Enough with option six.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, frankly, as we model the system, we already have topography data in here. What we're talking about in four is really some habitat improvements. We're going to get some model results for these areas anyways, so we'll be able to look at that. I don't know that we really have a decision point that we need to make for four at this time. Now, I think we can look at the results, see what's coming back, and then if there's additional information that's needed or we need to tweak it somehow, we can do that.
All right, so
this is Jim once again. In my view, the biggest problem is we don't have enough cold water in the main stem. So I'm surprised that we would want to divert water into side channels, unless there's hyperreic recharge in those side channels to give us a net gain of cold water. To my mind, if you divert water from the main stem into the side channels, I think it's more than likely to warm up quicker because it's shallower, depending on the amount of shade. I think it's the exact opposite of where we should be going.
Yeah, just to clarify, Jim, we're not proposing to do anything different than's already happening at side channels alternative four in the sense of diverting flows. We're not proposing to change at this point any inverts at side channels. They're active from, when it starts raining and it wets up in October or so through May. And there are cool spots in there. And so what we're trying to do is to maximize, there's very little habitat to almost zero. Because I think they're relatively new channels. So what we're trying to do is just maximize habitat. We're not proposing to direct more flow into there that's already existing.
Something you may not be aware of about those is that as the water drops, because they don't generally run all year round, although the upper one is a little bit better, we trap quite a few juveniles. We've gone in with and done some rescue, but there's a fair amount of juveniles being trapped in there. So it's because they go dry or they isolate and then they get picked off by the birds and the raccoons. So as Jim pointed out, it's a little more complex than what we've had time to adequately, look into it. Just please keep that in mind.
I think we should focus all our attention on some hybrid two and three and postpone work on Mill Creek or the side channels until we solve the major issue.
in some cases, just the logistics of an implementation plan, we'll probably have to revisit this once we see the results and start to narrow down exactly what is going to happen out there. But as far as an implementation plan, sometimes it makes sense to bite off a side channel as an individual project from a funding perspective. A funding source like the SURF board may be able to bite off a $400,000 side channel project versus a main stem project that might cost $1 million or $3 million. I'm just throwing numbers out there. I don't know what it would cost. I'm just saying that may work out logistically to do a side channel, just to put that out there. Just to get some logs in the water instead of waiting to do some more assessments and more modeling, more of this. Let's get some logs in the water as soon as we can, is what I'm saying.
Let's go back to, I think, Jim, I don't think anybody disagrees that the pit area is the highest priority. But I think, Paul, I go back to you and your grant and what your grant conditions require. And I think they do require some input, certainly on the Mill Manly situation. Isn't that part of the scope of the project? And there are issues there that I think we need to look at, particularly if you're going to look at alternative six. And I think Jim touched on those. It's what are the impacts that we've seen in terms of flow and sediment inputs due to the 502 modifications. And if we're looking at alternative six, I think as Gardner pointed out, you have some question in terms of how much flexibility you have given the location of the county shops there and whether or not it would be possible to move those shops and expand that. But it seems to me that, again, I think if you're going to honor the scope of what you've contracted for under your grant, you probably are going to have to take a look at Mill and Manly. Is that correct?
Yes.
I would also add from a modeling perspective that it's better to treat the system as a whole and look at all the areas, because they're going to be the upstream things are going to be impacting the downstream. So it's kind of hard to not look at this a little more holistically.
Well, and I think if you're looking at option six and moving that channel back to the north, that almost includes those side channels that you were looking at in option four as well.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's what we're currently scoped to do under the contract.
But again, I think Jim's point's well taken. I think the highest priority and the biggest issue we have to deal with is down there in the pits. Are there any other additional thoughts or comments? We're at a little bit after 10:30, I see, and that's the scheduled time. Don't want to keep folks longer than we've asked, but certainly looking for that input so that Paul and the crew have enough to go on to be able to prepare for the next phase of this project and do some of this modeling.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate all the comments, and I do think we have enough information to start cranking these runs up, so we can have some results to look at. Not to put any pressure on the modelers, but hopefully over the next month or two. So that's the plan.
I've got one comment. I apologize for being in and out of this thing today. Got a Christmas tree farm, and with COVID and all that crap going on, I've had to do a lot of changes, and I just had 40 yards of bark dust brought in. But having lived on this river off and on since 1963 and permanently since 1982, and watching this thing, and there's been some great comments today, and I agree with quite a few of them. And one of the last ones there about looking at this whole river holistically between Mill Creek and down to Manly or wherever. I couldn't agree more. And the only comment I'll throw out here is that we've got two 100 foot cliffs, one immediately before or below our home, and as well as the neighbors here, and then one right across the river from the county maintenance yard there at Mill Creek. And many of you know, but I can tell you for sure, that every winter at extreme high flows and flood flows, there is a tremendous amount of erosion going on and carried on downstream. And for years, that was why WDF&W kind of suspended their red counts down below here. Now, there's 10 or 15 salmon, dead salmon, right below our home right now. And I'm not sure whether those have been flushed down with that little bit of rain we had earlier in October. But there is a tremendous width of CMZ immediately across the river from this high cliff at our place all the way to the Stordal entrance road that have numerous old river channels in there. And I like the comment here just from whomever it was. I'm sorry, I don't know a lot of you guys, but to pick off some of these side channels, I think is critical. And particularly as it relates to picking off some of the high flows that come down in the wintertime. And I just let it go at that. There needs to be some thought given to all the erosion that's continuing to be allowed upstream here, immediately up above the pits. So be that as it may, I'll just leave it at that.
Thanks, Bruce.
Any other thoughts or comments? People satisfied with where things are going so that we can put Paul to work and Gardner and Marco?
Get to work, Paul.
I'm just happy my three-year-old hasn't photobombed me yet and sat on my lap, although maybe that would have been a good thing.
All right. Well, there's nothing else. Paul, I think you can probably bring this meeting to a close.
Thanks. Thanks again, everybody, and I really appreciate all your thoughts. I have a few things to get out. I'll get out the comments, hopefully today. I'll follow up with an email doing that and laying out the timeline going forward. We have a lot to do. Keith. thanks to every one of you for making it. I know a lot of you stayed up late last night and really appreciate it. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks everybody.
I think if anybody has anything follow-up comments, feel free to give me a call or send me an email.
All right.
Good meeting. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks. Gosh, it was, I think, a very productive session. So looking forward to your next round of information for us.
Yes. It will not be nearly as long a time frame as happened between July and now. It'll be hopefully a lot quicker you'll hear back from us.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.
Keith, want to stay on for a sec? I think I re I'm pretty sure I hit the record button, so I think we'll have.
I did as well. I'm stopping it
right now. Oh, okay, great.
Of course, I recorded to the